step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
I feel like I'm in the midst of a bunch of people who are looking for a new SC, y'all. That's what it looked like to me.
Welcome to South Carolina, where we visited two dueling candidate cattle calls, one for the Republicans.
We get to make sure South Carolina continues to be a red state. Are you ready? Are you ready for this?
And one for the Democrats.
When we've elected Democrats up and down the ballot, South Carolina becomes central to this story about how we ended this incredibly divisive, hyper-partisan era of American politics.
We must stop the socialist revolution from happening in our country.
Making America's greatness accessible and affordable. That's what I do every day.
I'm back on the road with Jen and Aaron, and we're kicking things off at a local watering hole, as become our tradition on this show. Cheers.
Cheers to South Carolina.
Good to see you. Lucky,
man. Okay, so we're in South Carolina. Huge news. South Carolina is going to be first.
Ah, they're very excited about it.
Well, South Carolina's used to going first, but for some of the wrong reasons, okay. Right? I mean, first to secede from the Union, you know, started the Civil War, but now, first
now
to be picking the Democratic presidential nominee in 2028.
So, how about that?
Yeah, 250 years later, here we are.
People are very excited about it, though.
They are excited.
You know, we got around a little bit, and we talked about it, and they're really pumped up.
That puts us on the map.
I think we are here to set the precedent.
Y'all, maybe the kingmaker or the queenmaker.
Hey, I take that.
It means South Carolina is always going to be on Democrats' mind.
South Carolina voters have picked the Democratic nominee for every year since Bill Clinton. So,
well, there's one exception.
Tell me.
In 2004, the candidate I worked for, John Edwards, won South Carolina and did not go on to win the nomination. But other than that, everyone who won South Carolina, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, went on to win the Democratic primary.
The folks of South Carolina are very discerning and really practical. It's really kind of pragmatic. And so you get into the issue of, is it moderate?
It's kind of like how in North Carolina, when they say unaffiliated, they mean independent. Right. When you say pragmatic in South Carolina, it is code for moderate.
I would argue that pragmatic is about electability. What voters here, and especially Black voters here, are trying to figure out is who are the majority of white folks that they're going to need to get to the Democratic nominee and potentially president, because that is the person that we need to get in coalition with to get behind.
So what do voters in South Carolina want from their leaders right now? And what does that tell us about who might actually be able to win here and across the country? This is Long Play, Winning the South. Episode 5, South Carolina. For our first stop, Jen headed to Columbia to speak with political strategist Jaleesa Washington Price. She was a deputy for Hillary Clinton in South Carolina when she won in 2016, and she ran Kamala Harris's campaign in the state in 2020. If you want to know what it takes to win a Democratic primary here, she's the woman to talk to.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So South Carolina is now going to be first in the nation for the Democrats.
Yes.
What role did you play in that process?
Very small role outside of the prayers. I was lucky to be a part of a small kitchen cabinet who kind of helped give advice on how to make the best case for South Carolina remaining first in the nation. And I think we did a great job.
Apparently you did. Apparently you're very successful. What does it mean for the Democratic Party to have South Carolina be first in the nation?
It means a lot. I actually think it's good strategy.
Good strategy for the party.
For the party in general.
How so?
You know, you hear oftentimes about Black voters, Black population being the base of the party. That is true, but especially particularly with voters in the South and voters in South Carolina.
25% of the voters here are Black voters. I think people imagine a state with a lot of Black voters, and they imagine that those Black voters are going to be pretty liberal.
Yes, that's not the case. They are pragmatic voters. Kitchen table issues are top of mind.
And by pragmatic, you mean?
They want to win. We are having that discussion in our party, and I think we want to be a big tent for everybody, but we also know that we are in affordability crisis. The economy is top of mind for everybody. Right now, we want to stop the bleeding.
Right. I feel like there's a lot about this state that is misunderstood.
That's exactly right. And that's what I want people to really get to understand before 2028 really kicks off. Just not have preconceived notions of, like, how South Carolina voters are. Come and talk to the voters. Come to the communities. I think you'll be well surprised about how voters are really thinking about 2028.
What do you see as the opportunity for the South Carolina Democrats to grow with having the primary here?
Because of the resources that come into a state during a presidential primary, these campaigns are going to open offices and train staff and volunteers in the state, right? That's another structure and infrastructure that they're going to be leaving here to also help us keep organizing and keep engaging voters in the state.
What do you say to that argument that by being first, you're making yourself less relevant?
I saw that argument, and I respectfully disagree. What is going to motivate Black voters to turn out through the primary and through the general election? This is the perfect place to figure that out. I think we will still have a very important role in this process, and I will say more important role than we have in the past. We do believe it's value to have us at the front because we will pick a winner. We'll pick winners.
What do you do in South Carolina?
I feel like I need to get a t-shirt that says that. We pick winners in South Carolina.
Erin, Jen, and I met back up to talk about these old guard Democrats in the state who helped pick those winners, or at least help sway who gets to be seen as one.
This state is now going to have this first in the nation status. And Congressman Jim Clyburn could not be more thrilled. He is somebody that just looms so large over not just South Carolina, but national politics. He's been representing South Carolina for, I think, 33 years now.
The greatest mistake of my political career.
Don't say it.
In 2004, John Edwards was running for president here, and I advised him to leave Jim Clyburn's fish fry early. I was young and stupid.
Wow.
It is the must-attend event for Democrats in South Carolina. Oh, it was so dumb.
Very good.
But anyway, it was my
that.
Lesson in the power of Jim Clyburn.
Our demographics and our economy makes us the best state.
Now that's the man himself, South Carolina Representative Jim Clyburn. Erin caught up with him after he spoke at the Democratic candidate event we all started with.
Let us do this. Look at you. You slamming trim. We got fighting weight here.
What?
18th term.
Lots going on.
God willing, and the creek don't rise. You were headed for your 18th term, right? Now, South Carolina is going to be the first in the nation state to vote in the Democratic presidential primary. You used to say South Carolina, what was the cleanup hitter.
State.
But now they're going to be the leadoff hitter.
Yeah, that's what I kept telling them. I said, look, the leadoff hitter is the one that has, on percentages, the best chance to get at least one person on base.
I want to ask you about national politics, too, which you have great influence on. Saw the interview that you did where you said, you know, the Black people not showing up for Kamala Harris,
right,
you know, in large enough numbers was part of what cost her the election.
You know, a few people got upset with me for saying that. Why are you getting upset with me for telling the truth? The fact of the matter is, well, white voters turned out 71% and Black voters turned out 59%. You're talking about 11-point difference in the turnout. If it were a 2-point difference in the turnout, she would have won. It may be because Jim Clyburn didn't do a good enough job to energize the vote. It may be that our party didn't do a good enough job. It's up to the candidates and the parties to motivate the electorate.
I watched that redistricting effort here in South Carolina. You said attempting to redraw your district was Jim Crow 2.0.
We witnessed what was going on in this country with this redistricting that President Trump was pushing for. And they came to South Carolina, and he got it handed to him in South Carolina.
South Carolina lawmakers are shutting down a major redistricting plan backed by President Trump.
Ultimately, the state Senate did not decide to move forward with that plan. You said you talked to a lot of Republicans.
I may have talked to more Republican legislators than I did with Democratic legislators. And they did not want to do this.
Was that a testament to the relationships that you have in the state? Is it about people having that much respect or even fearing you? I mean, you loom pretty large over South Carolina.
Well, I'm trying to stay in close touch with South Carolinians, all South Carolinians. And I stayed married to the same woman for 58 years, so I know what it is to have disagreements and work through them.
Erin Jen and I sat down to debrief on the conversation with Clyburn and talk about how voters are reacting to the latest Republican power grab.
The first day of that special session to gerrymander Jim Clyburn's district coincided with the first day of early voting in South Carolina. And normally you get about 23,000 people voting on the first day. This year, 56,000 people voted early. So those voters wanted to send a message, better not mess with Jim Clyburn's seat.
People are really dialed in right now.
They are ready for a new South Carolina, one that is not just one party rule that has had a grip on this state for the better part of three decades, right? Like, they are saying, we want to be part of the coalition that tries to do something different in November and potentially beyond that.
Well, I was asking Steve Benjamin, who was the first African-American mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, went on to serve in the Biden White
House.
He's a superstar. And he reminded me of a couple of things about the people of South Carolina.
I'm not going to tell the president this, but which job did you like better, being mayor or working in the White House? Oh, tell the truth.
Mayor, absolutely. It's, you know, it's different. You and I both know having the opportunity to contribute at the highest levels of public service at the White House, it's amazing. However, having the power as the chief executive to take the collective vision of community and put into action for people every single day, there's something very special about that in the place that you love. It's a place where we value family, we value faith, we value relationships that are not transactional relationships,
yep,
but people who are actually willing to listen to you.
Talk to me a little bit about how you would describe the Democratic electorate in South Carolina.
People here are energized, excited. We are inextricably intertwined with the deep history of this country and of the South, and I think a real canary in the coal mine for what's to come across the South. What we have to figure out is how we literally become that big tent party again. We don't have intra-party fighting where we realize that there's a clear and present danger, literally, to the Republic. People are, in the words of Fannie Lou Hamer, sick and tired of being sick and tired. But some of these amazingly offensive, aggressive efforts post-Calais to try and disenfranchise voters have had the opposite effect of getting people just really engaged. And watching the amount of policy violence that's emerging from Washington right now, that's impacting people's lives.
Yeah.
And those are people who decidedly red and blue and everywhere in between. People want more, and people are engaged.
That energy has led to more candidates in more competitive races, as Jen, Erin, and I discussed.
Democrats used to not be able to field candidates for all of the congressional seats. Like, there's now a full slate of candidates like Nancy LaCour, three-star admiral, who gets kicked out of the United States Navy, but now she is running in the first congressional district of South Carolina.
Why did they kick her out? What excuse?
Because she's a woman.
They weren't promoting women.
It's a tough seat for Democrats to pick up. She's behind, but not by much. And she is new to South Carolina.
I mean, she may be new to South Carolina, but she's introducing herself to the voters, and maybe they like what they see.
Jen headed over to Charleston to talk to Nancy about her run for Congress and what it was like to be removed from her post by the Trump administration last year.
When my career kind of came to an end, you know, it was an abrupt end, of course.
Can you tell me about that day?
When I was removed?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was literally 1 year to the day that I had taken command of Navy Reserve. It came out of nowhere. There was no warning. I was called down to the senior four-star Navy officer's office. And he had, you know, tears in his eyes, and he said, "The secretary has asked me to relieve you, effective immediately." And I paused, and I was like, "Is there a reason?" And he said, "No, there's no reason given." And within an hour, I was out of the Pentagon, last time I wore a uniform.
Oh,
And you had been in the Navy for?
35 years.
What do you hear from people about how the military is being run under Secretary Hegseth?
People are concerned that he is really destroying our military from the inside out. You know, now that politics and religion have been injected into the military, it eats away at the cohesion, you know, and that's what makes our military so great, is that it doesn't matter who's standing next to you, you all focus on the mission. Now they're gonna question whether their leaders are there based on merit or because they're politically aligned. It undermines the chain of command.
You came here and then decided to run for Congress.
You know, when I did get removed from my position, I really felt like I wasn't done serving, and this is what we decided to do.
Prior to this, did you consider yourself a Democrat or a Republican?
I mostly voted Republican for most of my life until Trump came on the scene, and that was kind of the end for me. Always been a moderate. I still support, you know, a strong military and things like that, just based on my background.
You're new to this district, but there are a lot of people in this district that have a similar background to you. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
A lot of, I think the veteran population of your district is like 11%, which is really...
But if you put the military families into that, it's 20%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You are the kind of person you have to convince in order to win this race.
Yeah.
What do you find that people here are really worried about?
The cost of living is... really the number one issue for everybody. But the war is a close second. It is very concerning that we are in yet another forever war.
You have to win over Republicans in order to win.
That's right.
A district like this.
I already have. People will come up to me and say, I'm a Republican, I'm voting for you.
What's in their head?
Like, we need a change. We need somebody who isn't entrenched in politics, right? Oh. And somebody who's just gonna bring common sense and knows how to get things done. And I think they recognize that from, you know, a military career.
Republicans in South Carolina have a lot to think about for the fall, but now there's another major race to watch. Who will take over the Senate seat left by Lindsey Graham's untimely death?
Lindsey Graham, who is beloved in the state, who's been a longtime serving Republican, Senator here, just passed away. If you talk to people, they will tell you that if Jim Clyburn and Lindsey Graham agreed on anything that they needed for South Carolina, both of them together could get stuff done.
When Lindsey Graham passed away, his sister called me and asked me would I be a part of his service. I told her, absolutely. We didn't agree on much politically, but we believed in South Carolina, and we worked together.
Lindsey Graham's unexpected death caused an opening here. The governor appointed Lindsey's sister to sit in his space. She's decided that she's gonna run for the next full term. And of course, that opened the race up for a lot of high profile people.
Who are they? Let's find out. Russell Fry and Ralph Norman, both US representatives. Businessman Mark Lynch, former Governor Mark Sanford is back. And Darlene Graham, Lindsey's sister, who is now the incumbent.
Jen and Aaron went to hear them speak at a Republican candidate forum to better understand their vision for South Carolina and what they think will resonate with Republican voters today.
What's up, Charleston?
How are you? What I would like to focus on as your next U.S. Senator
is a family-first agenda.
We are getting ready to elect a person for the next 6 years. You're going to get married to that person.
We are walking our way toward the most predictable financial crisis in the history of man. We're going to add $1 trillion of debt to the national debt over the next 100 days.
That was a crowded field with a lot of red meat.
We're on the back end of the Trump era.
Sure.
And it sort of felt like 2015 to me in there.
Can we sustain the American dream? Not if we don't get the numbers right.
Not any kind of new vision. It was not a particularly hopeful message tonight.
Yeah.
But I actually heard a lot of the culture war stuff that fires up that MAGA base.
Back then, we didn't talk about transgender.
Elect somebody who's willing to go toe-to-toe with the radical left.
The socialist message ends in death and destruction.
The president may be on his way out, but I don't know that those ideas are going anywhere.
It's not a gaining. It's Satan versus Jesus.
I did not find one person who was supporting Darlene Graham.
She was not here tonight. These people who were very patient and attentive and sat through, you know, 2 hours of speeches from these candidates, and they didn't get to hear from her.
Do you want to tell us who you voted for?
Mark Sanford.
Trump, our debt is a big deal. He knows how to manage the budget.
I am supporting my guy, Russell Fry, and I hope everybody else will make him your guy, too. He's my guy, Russell Fry.
I did not find one person who found that Trump endorsement was meaningful.
As much as I love and respect Donald Trump, his endorsement doesn't carry any weight with me.
South Carolina, they're going to think
it almost certainly looks like this is going to a runoff. But who are we talking about that's going to be in that runoff?
Jen and Aaron met back up with me to talk about the dynamics of the race and whether there's any opening for a Democrat.
Republican side right now, they have to do three races.
Yeah.
So it's room for the Democratic nominee, Annie Andrews, to run. You know, still obviously a super tough state.
My name is Dr. Annie Andrews, and I am here tonight on my mission to become the first elected female senator from the state of South Carolina. Who I'm running against has changed, but who I am running for has not changed. A reporter asked my former opponent what he thought about me, and what he had to say was that I seemed like an attractive, nice lady with a couple of kids, but he didn't know what I believed in. So here's what I believe in. I believe that healthcare is a human right. I believe we need to fully fund the Medicaid program. I believe we need to protect Medicare and Social Security. I believe we need to fully fund the CDC and the NIH, and I believe we need to impeach and remove RFK Jr.
Annie is running for the Senate.
Yeah,
she listed.
She definitely seemed ready.
She went on fire.
She's a pediatrician, right? I mean, she's presiding over a state where, I mean, they had a measles outbreak that was huge here.
She's coming at this from a perspective of a caregiver and a pediatrician, not a politician, and
yeah.
She's resonating.
Aaron sat down with Dr. Annie Andrews to talk about the state of the Senate race after Graham's passing.
It was shocking, and it's been shocking to the entire state and the entire country. Lindsey Graham has been in Congress for 30 years. He is a very large political figure here in South Carolina. But it didn't change why I'm running. You know, the day RFK Jr. was nominated to lead HHS was the day that I really started seriously taking under consideration the nudges I had been getting to get in this race. For a very long time, he's been peddling in these anti-vaccine conspiracy theories on social media platforms. And the obvious result of that is the outbreak of a preventable infectious disease like the measles. I'm the only general election candidate in this race right now. I really have the playing field to myself because I'm able to talk to the general electorate about my vision for South Carolina, about my plans for South Carolina. And what we're seeing as a result of the necessity of this special primary election is all these Republicans, all these ambitious, in my view, ego-driven Republicans racing to the right. They're offering no ideas, no vision. They're just pledging allegiance to Donald Trump and blaming our problems on immigrants.
Democrats have typically lost by double digits here. I mean, in 2020, I think about Jamie Harrison's race. He raised $100 million, and he still lost by 10 points. So what is it about your campaign that's different?
We've had six more years since Jamie Harrison ran of failed Republican leadership. This is a totally different political environment, a totally different election cycle. We've seen the results of really every election since November 2024, where we've seen double-digit swings to the left, including all throughout the Southeast. So this big blue wave that we've seen nationally predicted is going to come crashing up on the shores. We are going to shock the country on November 3rd when a Democrat, a pediatrician, and a mom wins the Senate seat. South Carolina.
Aaron, Jen, and I had one final chat to make sense of everything we'd heard across the state and what's to come.
I mean, is it 2028 yet? I'm ready to see what South Carolina's going to do.
And that's going to start on Wednesday, the morning after the election.
That's right. Right now, everybody's trying to stay aggressively focused on the midterms. But 12 o'clock, 1201, yeah, people are going to be thinking about the future. And so this lineup with South Carolina going first, Nevada going second, it's going to change everything.
South Carolina's always been a place that Democrats come to. But now it is going to be home base. Everything is rearranging.
From Left, Right, and Crooked Media. Watch Long Play on YouTube at youtube.com/@longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcast. Episode 6, Mississippi, comes out next Monday.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.